This is the Average Guy Network, and you have found Home Gadget Geek show number 626 with Mike Wieger, recorded on October 10th, 2024. Here on Home Gadget Geeks, we cover all the favorite tech gadgets that find their way into your home and sometimes outside of your home. News, reviews, product updates, and conversation, all for the average tech guy. I'm your host, Jim Carlson, broadcasting live from the AverageGuy.tv studios here in a beautiful Bellevue, Nebraska. Mike, summer is just not letting go. I saw frost warnings for early next week, but man, no rain. It's been hot.
We keep getting little hints of it. We'll have a nice 70-degree day. And, well, what's funny is they came around and did aeration and for my lawn, and so I need to mark my sprinklers, which every year when that comes around, you know, I don't watch my sprinklers. They go off at 5 a.m. I don't think about them. I must have two heads that are broken because I know there are heads in the zone. They weren't popping up, and it's in a big dead patch that's not usually dead. So spring project for me will be as soon as spring comes back around, figuring out what happened to those two sprinkler heads.
Yeah. Well, it's been dry here in Nebraska. We've had a couple last weekend. We had 95. It's on Saturday, 95 with fire warnings across the plains. And we had friends on Sunday out at Valles. Valles is our big pumpkin patch here in town. Super popular. Hundreds of thousands of people visit it every year. A farm just outside of Valles caught on fire on Sunday and started burning, and they stopped letting people in Valles. So yeah, you don't think, I think we talked about this last week. You don't think about the prairie burning down, and it does. It absolutely, it under these conditions, we have prairie fires, and they're just as dangerous. I've watched them do some real destruction as a forest fire. So it's kind of crazy. Anyways, we'll post show with some world-class show notes at theaverageguy.tv. Big thanks to our, I'm having trouble talking tonight, our Patreon subscribers. If you want to join that team, we got one $5 plan. Head out to theaverageguy.tv/Patreon. And of course, if you want to support us via the Amazon affiliate link, just head out to theaverageguy.tv. There's the disclaimer is there. If you just click on the disclaimer, click through it. You don't need to do anything else on Amazon. Hopefully you did some Amazon Prime shopping during this, whatever. I don't even know if I believe these things anymore, Mike.
Right? I don't either. I'm like, didn't we just have Prime Day? What is this? I don't know. There's just
it's every Thursday's Prime Day.
Yeah.
You know, now at Amazon. Yeah. I just set up alerts. Big thanks to Dan Lefebvre, who joined me last week, and appreciate that, Dan. Thanks for coming on. It was a well-received show. Mike Wieger is back with me. Mike, 8 years ago tonight, I got this notification on my phone. Do you know where we were 8 years ago tonight?
You and me? Were we at the old Mattress Factory meeting for the first time? Or no? We were at the cigar bar downtown.
No. All those things could have been true.
Washington, D.C.?
We were in Washington, D.C. together.
It had to be one of those. Man, that was 8 years ago?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy how fast that goes? We've been podcasting for a couple years together, had never really got together in person in Omaha. I think maybe once or twice to that point. And so and the Facebook post, I remember saying it takes me going to Washington, D.C. to see my local podcast.
We were both out there for work, if I remember right, which is wild. Because we started podcasting, I think, when I was in law school. And that DC trip, I would have been in my KPMG days. And now it's just wild. Yeah. The history. We've been podcasting there for a while. I know I've been out the last few years, but
yeah. No, it was just fun to see that pop up. We were, I think, right in front of the Washington Monument or something like that. And we just got together. You met me at Gallup's headquarters, I think. And we walked our way over there.
We did. Yep.
We had a good time. So it's hard to believe it was 8 years ago. Well, you're back tonight. You kind of dropped a bomb in the last time you were here. I think at the very end of the show, we talked about Meshtastic. I think it was at the end. And I heard, well, I've heard from several who took you up on your offer and began to set up these Meshtastic
networks.
Yeah. Give us an update on your space. What have you done since then?
I just keep building and tinkering. But my favorite part is, at least in Omaha here, I would say the number of nodes since that show, has easily 4 or 5 times the amount of nodes we had back then. And it is a pretty, like, when you're driving around Omaha, you've got coverage now, almost like cell coverage. It's kind of crazy how many nodes have just popped up. So I've been loving watching the community grow. I always love getting the messages on the main channel of like, hey, I'm new to this. Can you hear me? And I'm like, yeah. And everyone chimes in. Yep, we can all hear you. And they get excited. And so being a little bit of a Sherpa, I guess, I love helping new people when they message through Meshtastic. They'll say, you know, when they set up a new node, they'll have questions. Oh, what do you guys do with these? What do I do now? I just kind of like responding to those people here locally. But I have been still building some new nodes. So this is the latest one. And this one, actually, I can't take credit for building. I did buy this one because a guy is selling them on Etsy now. But I love this form factor. So if you guys remember last time, I showed you a big box that I had built, and it was really large. It worked, but a little bit more cumbersome. This is really elegant. So this, oops, I must have dropped one of the clamps when I ran down here. But this just clamps onto like a fence or your balcony or deck or whatever you want. And this is all solar up here. So it's a little dusty if it's been outside for a while. This thing has been out for, I want to say a month and a half, and it's still at 92% battery because during the day the solar charges it up enough and then uses the battery at night and lather, rinse, repeat the next day. So this one has required no charging or anything. It's been great. So this one I just put on my fence outside. I still have the one up on the pole. During a storm, though, it ripped the solar off of that one I showed you guys on the show last time. So my glue wasn't strong enough, and I thought it was okay, but I noticed that it went offline about a few weeks ago, and I just haven't got up on the roof yet. So I think maybe some water got in during that storm, and maybe I gotta go open that box back up and see. So the one on the roof is down right now, but this one has been filling taking its place and been working great. So yeah, I like experimenting with different form factors, what you like, what you don't like. I think when you sell something like this on Etsy, I want to say this is like $100, maybe. Pre-built, don't have to do anything, just configure the software when you get it. I love that. It's a pretty good price point for this nice professional looking form factor. I think actually, so if you look at the bottom, I think what this guy does, he goes to Lowe's and he buys the solar lights because it's a light. And he pops it open and puts the radio guts inside, drills a hole for an antenna. And that's what he does. And then he just repurposes and sells them. So it's a pretty ingenious little form factor there, and taking something he can buy at Lowe's and make it into a Meshtastic node.
John, who went all in, I think I can say that. He went in on this. Maybe not all in, but he went in on it. He said he says, I live on over a hill. I can see one other node, ironically, at the end of my street. A neighbor I hadn't met despite living there for 30 years. So that's the kind of stuff that happens, right? Is it a little bit like CB radio in some regards where it's local? It's not like ham where you're
right
going out super far, right? These are neighborhood kind of nodes, right?
I mean, you'll get, so I can hit directly from my office. So my office is like 132nd. I live on 180th. I can hit directly my office to my house. So pretty decent. I mean, that's 50 blocks, right? That's pretty good coverage. Yeah. But it definitely works a lot better once you, and the power of it is that it is truly a mesh. So if you can bounce through different nodes, you can cover a whole city. So if I send a message from out west, my radio only needs to see the next guy and then the next guy, and it passes that message down the chain. So that's the power of it, is the more people get involved, the bigger, the wider area you can cover, which is a lot of fun. People who have mountains and hills, John, you'll actually, if people in your area do get into it, you'll be their best friend, because if you're up on a high point and if you put yours into router mode, that high point, having one node in a high spot, will give everyone fantastic coverage because all they have to see is you. And think of it kind of like a ham radio repeater in that regard, right? You put these repeaters in areas that are really high up. That way it covers, you don't have to be line of sight for everyone else.
Well, that's super cool. John said, can you put the link?
I will. I'm going to try and find it. Discord. Okay. I'll see where I found it. I'll probably find my receipt or somewhere. I'll find it and track it down.
We were talking earlier in the show about a long time ago. Brian says, I remember Mike on open mic night. That's, remember those days?
Oh, I remember the open mic night days. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
John says he wants to use these to stay in touch with my wife while hiking in the Colorado mountains. Would have been useful in Yosemite this spring.
Yes. Well, very much so.
Yeah. You think so?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
I think it depends, right? How far away are you going to be from her when she's hiking? I would also just pick up some GRMS radios and just use, walkie talkies. That would be good. But for text based stuff, it could be really good. Yeah.
And it's all just text based messaging, right?
That's it is really right now. It's just text based messaging. Here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You think there'll be other things coming to it?
It depends on what they want to do with this spectrum that they use. It's pretty low bandwidth. So as far as if you were going to congest that network with voice, they're already having issues when you get a lot of nodes in one area with being too busy. Just because of the way that they transmit and receive, they talk over each other a lot, because with other technologies, there's like a time, like, hey, from 0 to 30 seconds in a minute is transmit. The next 30 seconds is receive. With these, it's just like, I decide I'm just going to start yelling and I'm going to start listening and then I'm going to start yelling. And so it's not the best technology to use for something like voice, but I could see them modifying it and go in that direction in the future.
So it is kind of like CB radio for, except you can mesh. CB radio is just one. You can't jump from one CB to the next CB to reach people. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And then of course, because it's low bandwidth, no voice, you're not talking. This isn't creating. You could. I mean, maybe in the future they'll do some things to make
that. No, but what they are doing with it was telemetry data. So if you think it's just packets of information, and you don't have to send it to the main channel that everyone hears, you can set up your private channels. Like I have a private channel where only if I have the key and someone else has the key, it still uses the mesh to send the message. But no one can read what's in that message unless you have the key, right? Yeah. So Jim, if you ended up getting this set up, we could set up an average guy channel. We could talk to each other all the way across town using that network, and no one else would be able to see the messages except for us. So what people are doing with that is they're saying, okay, the best example I can give you is if you're into smart home stuff, oftentimes the easiest example is I have a mailbox that's way at the end of my driveway down a lane, and I would love to get a notification when the mailbox is open or closed. People have been trying to use, Zigbee and Z-Wave for all of that, but it's too far. Well, some guys have put a Meshtastic node down there, a Meshtastic node in the house. It sends the packet, same sort of data. So you can do that. When I say telemetry, it can really be anything. So some people are experimenting with using it for a little bit longer range, stuff like that, right? Where a lot of us have that Zigbee in our house and Z-Wave and Bluetooth. This would just be a longer range version of that.
First, I know it depends on the antenna, but what's the max range, do you think, for some of these devices, if you were to guess?
Think about it as line of sight.
Okay.
Really the way I would think about it. If the two antennas can see each other, you're going to be able to do it. Meaning, from the top of a mountain to a valley, you could do 100 miles maybe. I don't know, right? Mm. Like it's because you can see that. But in town, you have all the ups and downs, you have buildings and everything. So I would say with stuff in between you, think about it, probably about 1 mile or 2 miles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I may give it, the rusty nail may need an antenna on the outside of it, and maybe it's time to, it'd make a great, like you said, with a solar panel, it would be self-contained.
Yeah.
Out there, you could, I could put a panel on that roof. It doesn't get sun all day. It gets enough, though, in the morning and then in the evening. I could probably run a really nice something out there and then be a node down here, and we can get some things.
And this will give us a good excuse to get together, because I have an extra solar node that's just sitting outside right now. I just built it, and I thought I was going to put it somewhere, and I didn't. So I'll just drop that by. You can at least test with that one, see if you like it. John Biggs brought up a good point. I don't know. Did I bring up the fact that I fly with these in the airplane last podcast? So he's right. So John said you can pick up nodes while flying in a plane. It's my favorite thing to do now. I put one of these nodes in my backpack when I go on a plane trip. And from the plane, you start to pick up all the nodes that are on the ground. You can message from the plane. And people love getting those. So I'll be like, hey, from 30,000 feet, Southwest flight, whatever. And then you can message back and forth. Now, obviously, you're going pretty fast. So you only have a short window being able to message with those individuals. But it is kind of fun that even through it stays in my backpack. I don't want to freak people out because it kind of looks like a detonator of sorts, right?
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a big antenna.
Yeah. So, I leave it in my backpack, and through the metal of the plane, it can still reach all the way to the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
let's
mean,
do it. Let's get you
after
one.
The, well, listen, after the show, I was chatting with Ed Sullivan. He was like, "Are you so you're gonna make a you're gonna make a mesh that's you know like how is this that different? Like we have the internet. You could you know you can go anywhere and do anything." And I think the interesting thing you brought up about this, the interesting thing is this doesn't necessarily depend on existing infrastructure, right?
At all.
Something were to go down, or if you wanted private, because you're using private keys, you could create your own private local, I hate to say network, but let's just use that term.
Yeah.
You could create your own private network on this.
Oh, thing. Yeah. When Verizon was down the other day, my wife and I are on Verizon, had she been at home, I would have told her just to grab one of those nodes and we could have been texting back and forth. Mm-hmm. Right. So, You know, that was a clean example of it. Hunting, acreages, I got a lot of guys who share hunting property where there is no cell reception or it's really spotty. They all just keep their nodes down at the hunting property. They all grab one when they go out to hunt and they can all text back and forth, while they're out hunting. So there's some different applications for it, depending, there's the prepper side, there's the no cell service side. And then it's just kind of fun. It's just fun.
Jeffrey Ballmer. No, anyways, I may check it out. And when you come over to drop it off, plan to stay for a few minutes and we'll burn a few candles. And
I love it. Let's do it.
Yeah. No, it'll be super good. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about you. You had sent me some notes. Of course, a couple weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, I went solo. I talked about doing some AI voice cloning that I've been doing. I kind of been messing around with that at work with 11 Labs, trying some of that out. There has been some talk, I know, of creating your own LLM, right? Your own large language model, your own ChatGPT, so to speak. You've been messing with this. Talk a little bit about where you're at in that space.
I have. So when you talk about creating your own ChatGPT, there are from left to right in terms of complexity and how deep you want to dive in, you can go a lot of different ways. And what I will say is I am on the scratching the surface. I am not creating my own LLM, but I am hosting my own ChatGPT. So, but you can, right, as you start to look into this, if you're a data scientist, if you're kind of a data nerd, and if you want to pay to have the compute power, that's the hardest part. You could create your own large language model. But what I've been doing, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen YouTube videos about this, because it kind of gained popularity. But what I'm doing is I am running my own ChatGPT on my servers in my basement. So what that entails is most people are using a software called Ollama. So Ollama. And what Ollama is essentially is it allows you to download the public LLMs. So for example, companies like Meta and Google and all those companies are giving out their LLM for people to use. So the most popular one is called Llama 3. They're actually on Llama 3.1 now. So that is a LLM. It's a large language model that you download locally. It's about 8 gigs of data. So you're downloading that to your computer and you're running it. You really do want a GPU for this, but you're running it locally with a GPU to do the processing. So what you could do is you can even run this on your Mac. Like you don't need to run it on like a server. You could run it locally on your own computer. So you can run your Mac, your Windows machine, and you can use the terminal to interface it. So that's the kind of the intro to it, right? So you can download an LLM, you can run it. It's using your own processing power. And the main benefit there is that everything is staying local. So if you're concerned at all about privacy, or sometimes I just am asking embarrassing questions in my career that I should know the answer to by now, this far in my career, that maybe I just don't want ChatGPT knowing, what is a restrictive covenant? Oh, didn't you graduate law school, Mike? Yeah, but I just can't remember, right? Like examples like that. So, there are those sort of things. So that's the intro to it, but you can take it one step further if you want to have it accessible on your computer and then maybe your work computer and all across the world. What you can do is you can run Ollama. You can run a second Docker called Open Web UI, and Open Web UI is the web portal, a web interface for Ollama that looks and feels just like ChatGPT. And so when you're doing that, you're opening a web page and you're running it through there. You can have all the users you want. So if you're running this for your family, you can then have a web interface for your own private ChatGPT. So I'll share just real quick here, kind of what it looks like. Give me 1 second.
Oh, I need to get over here.
I think that's the right one. So what you're seeing right there is you're seeing my local instance. And so what I do like is they've kind of streamlined this. You can have all your chats along the left to create a new chat. And then you can select what model you want to use if you run multiple. Right now, I'm just running that Llama 3.1. And so, you know, right as we started the show, I asked it, you know, tell me about the Roman Empire. So it gave me some stuff. Tell me a bit more about 27 BC. So it said that. And so you can kind of get a gist of how fast it is when it's here. So it does take a little bit. And actually,
What are you running it on?
So I'm running it on a 1060. Graphics card. So an old graphics card that's in here. And usually the first time after you kind of come back to this, it has to load it all into the GPU memory. So sometimes the first response you send it is a little slow and then it really starts to pick up. So you can see it's kind of going through there. Now, if you were running this on a CPU, this text would be going across extremely slow. Mm-hmm. So it's coming back for me with an answer. So the next time we talk to it, it'll probably be a little bit faster than it was right there. It probably loaded it out of memory in the last 15, 20 minutes. But you can change that setting. So for me, in my server, my GPU is used for a lot of things. It's transcoding videos for the Plex server. It's doing live transcoding of some of those. It's running this. So you can set it to keep all of that in memory at all times, but I have it back it out so it frees up that memory for all the other stuff it does. It's pretty fast. The other cool part about this too is what they're experimenting with is image generation. So for AI and that the image generation is kind of popular right now. So the other service that I run, and I'm totally going to blank on the name. Anyway, you can run another Docker container. It'll come to me in a second. You can run another Docker container, again, giving it access to a GPU, and it can do image generation. So what I really like to do is, and you can use AI to help you write the prompt to create a good image. So what I always tell ChatGPT is, you know, draft me an image prompt for two guys podcasting, make it hyper realistic. And the podcast is about tech. So the reason that I ask ChatGPT to do it is I don't know. I don't really want to go through all the detail of drafting up an image prompt, essentially, which is what tells the AI all the details it needs to create the image. The AI is a lot better at doing that than I would be. So I always have it draft the prompt itself. Oh, and I'm going to get an error. Of course, when I'm trying to show it off, I get an error. Wonder if it'll refresh for me. Anyway, I usually never have issues. So I was going to tell you, it's usually rock solid. I'm glad I didn't say that before that happened.
It always happens when you're trying to demo.
But it's still pretty cool that all of this then is running locally, not going out to the internet anywhere. And this could be accessed. I have the link on my phone. I have it on my work computer. And so you can run all this just with a server in your basement with an extra GPU.
Ask it if it knows the podcast Home Gadget Geeks. Let's just see what is in the LLM there. See what kind of info we get back.
I'm going to try a new chat.
I built this pretty big rig. It's got 120 gig of RAM. It's got a nice GPU in it. Popular technology and gadget themed podcast.
Oh, but Scott Johnson and Dave Faber is who it thinks it is.
Oh, Home Gadget Geeks. I wonder who that is. I wonder if that's the home. No, that's not the home tech guys. Well, here's a situation where you're LLM may be wrong, right?
Oh, I said, I thought Jim Collison was the host. It said, oh, after double checking, I found that Jim Collison is indeed one of the hosts along with Dave Faber. Do you know a Dave Faber?
I've never had a Dave Faber on the podcast.
Scott Johnson used to be a co-host, but it seems he's no longer part of the show. Nope, I don't think so.
No, not
well,
Scott
Johnson. Well, you know what's funny is Scott Johnson is a podcaster. He's like a big one for Frog Pants Studios. He has like a lot of art based and other technology podcasts, but not Home Gadget Geeks. So
no.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Interesting. Well,
there you go. What do you think? Okay, so as we think about, is this what you know? Do you know what version, like OpenAI has, you know, version 4.0 or 4.1, or do you know what versions these are?
I haven't kept up with it as much. Llama 3.1 just came out this year. I do know that, but of course they're always going to keep the latest data for themselves. And yeah. The one thing about this is that I don't have it turned on. This cannot reach out to the internet. So okay. This is just pulling from whatever knowledge they trained and put into that LLM that I'm using. So they're starting to experiment in the open web UI with allowing you to connect out to outside resources. I just haven't turned that part on yet. Yeah,
you can't train any of these. Like I couldn't give it additional information about, like I couldn't give it transcripts of this podcast to train on. Right.
Right. Right.
Right. Okay.
But you can, so it can summarize documents for you. So you can actually add a document and so you can see how fast I must've needed to refresh. Cause now it's starting to respond to me pretty fast. And again, this is only on the 1060. So in my other rig, I have a 3060 Ti that actually does the image generation. Stable Diffusion. I knew it would come to me. Stable Diffusion is the name of the Docker container that does image generation.
Try the image again. See if it.
Yeah, let's try.
Let's give it another run. As the riveting audio of Mike typing in the query.
Yeah.
Into the, just imagine it yourself. I won't distract you as you're trying to get the right query in, but it's interesting. Cause I've thought like, I'd love to run my own, but the AI models that are out there are so good.
Yeah.
And so free. And, you know, from at least right now, they're doing pretty well.
What I love about this, what it's really good at, especially on the local side, is, you know, things like for my job, when I'm doing modeling, financial modeling, and when I'm, you know, trying to make something sound a little better and okay, draft this up and write it in this way, it does a pretty good job. Okay. So what it just did though, so I asked it for an image prompt. So then you can see the type of response it gave me. It's describing the background, what it should be, the podcasters, the equipment. And then what I do is I click on generate image. And so this is now sending it from one. I am curious why I'm getting so many errors tonight. It's actually.
Maybe you got that server turned off.
I did have to reboot one of the servers and I'm wondering if it just never reloaded. But what it does is it's sending it from, and actually these are on two separate servers. So Open Web UI is on one server and with Llama, but then Stable Diffusion is on a separate server because it has a better GPU. So we'll try it. Yeah. It's giving me a failure for some reason. Interesting. As soon as I try and show it off. But yeah, so you would click this image button and then it would take that prompt and create an image for you typically. And it would put it up top. Yeah.
No, it'd be a good use of, you know, I've got this gaming rig. I don't really game much with it. I end up watching more YouTube videos than anything else. And it was a little bit of an overkill, but I've got it, right?
Yeah.
It's fun to build. I've got it. It's available to me, whatever. I'm always kind of like, oh, maybe I give this a try. I think this might be one to follow. As far as I know, there are others. I guess I'd be interested in folks letting me know if they are doing their own GPTs from a training model perspective. I think it'd be interesting to feed in some data from the podcast or transcripts. We kind of did this at work where they scraped the site. I think back in, I want to say, 2019, we started transcripting every single podcast that we did. And so they scraped the site for all that podcast, for all those transcripts, and then they fed it into the Gallup GPT. And so it's like, I have probably more data than anybody else if you just think about it from a text standpoint.
Yeah.
And so you'll see we have an internal GPT. Eventually it'll launch to the public. But you'll search for something. Tell me something about the Clifton Strengths theme of significance. It'll bring some stuff back and then it'll reference the podcasts, which is super cool. And then you can go in and say, oh, okay, that one was okay. We talked about it here. And it's actually a really helpful for because it's specific. It's very, very helpful. I mean, these LLMs are so good at summarization.
That's where it's going to be huge. We did something similar at our firm. We have thousands of training cards. So when an advisor wants to know, hey, how do I do this in this system? Yeah. They have to go find the training card. Well, so we created an LLM with that. What's funny about it is we have the guy who creates all the training cards. His name is Steve. So we named the AI Steve. So it's, oh, hey, you still ask Steve. You just ask the new Steve. Ask this Steve instead of asking old Steve. And it works really well. I mean, when you create all that, you're putting it on data that you have and very specific to you, and you want to keep that all private, it works really well. And that is definitely all possible here. But like I said, I've just scratched the surface of what I've done. Yeah. But within this, you can upload data that can start to learn from, and you can really start to get customized with it.
We did some work with Microsoft to wall off when we're sending queries or we're putting data into, hey, summarize this data set. That's proprietary data. That's our customer's data. We don't want that going out to the public GPT, right?
Yep.
So we've done some things to wall that off so that information is safe and secure. It's internal to us. It's not going out prompting the external, you know, versions of that. I could see now, not everybody can afford an enterprise version of ChatGPT. I could see for somebody who didn't necessarily small business, somebody who didn't want to necessarily same kind of deal. Data privacy is important. I want to keep that data private to me, but I want to take advantage of some of the summary capabilities, the generative capabilities of this OpenAI stuff. In setting this up and being able to dump their own data sets in or being able to put in their customer data. And it would stay, I'm assuming, stay local on that server. It doesn't necessarily take a ton of horsepower. It's not like you're going out and renting a data center to do some of these kinds of things, right? You could probably, so I could see that in a situation, you know, right, where you want your stuff to stay local or private,
so to speak,
right?
Yep. Yeah. Especially in heavy regulated industries, right? Financial, HIPAA with the healthcare stuff. If you're in any industry where that data is even, you know, you have more requirements, not just your own wanting to keep everything private, but regulation items would be nice.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
right. Justin asked if I integrated Ollama into Home Assistant yet. I have tried and I have failed about three times, Justin. So I know that they're working actually on having a better integration. They actually now, I think, have a formal integration with Home Assistant. I cannot get it to know what I have in my home. The easy way you test it is you say, hey, how many lights do I have on in my house? And it should be able to understand that. And it doesn't. So I think it's a work in progress. I think it'll get better, but I've tried it a few different ways. There were some hack arounds earlier this year. Then they came out with their formal integration. I've tried both and I have not been successful yet.
Sounds like we need to have Gavin back on to talk. He's our home assistant expert and have him back on to talk. I know he's done some of the voice integration stuff into it, and it may be interesting to I had Mike, just as a side note, somehow, so I'm running Home Assistant off of my Unraid box. And when the power went down, we had that big storm and the power went down, I lost a drive on Unraid. So brought the Unraid server back up, drive is down. All right, well, that's okay. I'll pull out the drive, put in a new one, rebuild the thing. It does its stuff. It's fine. But Home Assistant was blank. And I could not, for the longest time, I could not figure out. I'm like, well, that's weird. So I just reinstalled it. I was thinking maybe it got wiped out in the rebuild or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but then my dashboard was really, really nice and I didn't want to rebuild it. You know how when you spend a whole bunch of time
doing
something? I do not want to. So I waited. This is one time where procrastination paid off, right? So I waited and I waited and waited. And one day I was doing some things and it flipped over to the new, flipped over to the old dashboard. It was still there.
It was back.
Somehow I was running two instances of Home Assistant and one had an one had one IP address and was the local instance, and the other had another IP address. The new one had gotten a new, like I'd done one with a Docker and one with a VM.
Oh, a VM. Yep.
Something. Yep. But I couldn't see it anywhere in the stuff, right? And I'm just, it was maddening. And I must have worked on that thing for 2 hours to figure out what's going on. Finally, I just wiped out the new instance and went to the local address, and you know, the home assistant colon local.
Yeah.
The old dashboard came right back up. I was like, it's a miracle. Like, this is awesome.
I don't know how it happened, but it's a miracle.
I know how it happened. I didn't know what I was doing, right? But somehow I was running two instances of Home Assistant through different methods. And of course, it had signed a new IP address to one. So I was getting it to through the new IP address and so those kinds of things. I just didn't want to. The one Home Assistant was grabbing all the resources, like the Bluetooth driver and some of those other things. So the new Home Assistant couldn't see any of those things. And I was getting all these errors. And I'm like, I don't want to figure this out. So I got a little lucky one day and got that set back up. And it's working perfectly at this point. But we'll stay connected with you on this. It would be interesting to start feeding some. Now that I think about it, the Home Assistant collects a lot of data. And it would be super interesting to feed that. Much of it I can't make any sense of. It's just giant data chunks.
Yeah.
It would be interesting to feed those data chunks into your private version of GPT and start summarizing that.
Yes. Right? When am I using the most power? Yeah. What times, you know, is it, all those sorts of things are going to be, yes, massive for getting that integration working and getting it working well.
Gavin, if you're listening and you got something to say, send me an email, jim@theaverageguy.tv. We'll get you on the show. It's almost time to have him back anyways, but
just to clarify. So the image generation portion in open. So what I was showing you guys, that's in beta, and their latest update is having an issue with the image generation. So I hadn't used it in about 2 weeks. So that makes sense. So everything else is working great, but the image generation is apparently broken, but it is in beta to their defense. So
you were trying to troubleshoot that while I was talking to you. You didn't hear a word I said about that story, did you?
I did. I did. I got multitasked very well.
I'm just kidding. You're a lawyer. You can, I'm sure you can multitask very well. So, that does get interesting. Well, you know, all of a sudden to summarize your own data for your own water or water consumption or electrical consumption or some of those kinds of things that we've talked about, to do that locally, that'd be a really good use case.
And even beyond that, how many times is there an automation that you think of, but you don't really want to take the time to go in and make it all work and do the ifs, then that's, you know, Llama, I want to create an automation that does this based off of when I get home, I want the garage door to close, but only if it's this and that. And the LLM goes, boop, boop, boop. Yep, I know how to speak Home Assistant. And here's your automation based off of everything I know about your home, what you said. Like generating automations, I think, is another area that'll be really big for when you get the integration working well. Because that's the piece. I'm always thinking about those automations, but I just don't want to take the time to go in and actually think through the logic and set it all up.
Yeah. No, I definitely don't.
Yeah.
I definitely do not.
But would you, if you could just type it out or even speak it, hey, I want to make an automation that does this and all of a sudden it creates it for you and see if it works.
Listen, if I could dump the logs or whatever it is in Home Assistant that's collecting that data, and if I could dump those somewhere and then know that it's constantly, I got a data set over here and the LLM is looking at that data set, and then I could run some queries. I'd probably pre-format some queries to say, compare my energy usage. I could kind of do this on my bill, but compare my energy. What I can't do is compare my energy usage week over week over the last 12 weeks. That I'm not going to be able to do on my bill, right?
Yes.
But if I'm capturing that energy data or the water data or the, even if, so say I don't even have those, I don't have those sensors for all my power, but I've got some switches or some smart devices that are tracking that. I got some things plugged into it. I would think, gosh, I got this battery, you know, this Blue Eddy battery backup. It doesn't today. It doesn't have that capability, but there should be some capability where it's dumping usage logs. Oh, tell me what time of the day, right? Some of those kinds of things.
And it, to that point, you know, Justin said alerting to abnormal behavior. You know, I'm thinking about for a month, maybe this summer, I had a broken sprinkler head that I didn't know was broken because I can't see it. It's on the opposite of my fence and it was just gushing water. Hey, Mike, I noticed that normally, because my sprinklers are smart, they're connected in to Home Assistant. Normally, when your sprinklers run, you use this much water. So your water sensor, along with knowing your sprinklers are on, the past two times we've run, it's using double the amount of water during that time. Like, how amazing would that be? Because I can't track that. I don't know that. Even to your point, if I'm looking at the water bill, I just think, oh, maybe we ran the sprinklers more often this this month than last. Not that, hey, I know how much water that typically takes, and this time it's been more. That'd be nice. I would have found out about that broken sprinkler head 3 weeks earlier.
I think it's what we expected out of Siri, or I shouldn't say that too loud, or the A-Lady, or some of those kinds of things. Oh, Siri's super dumb. So even if I said Siri's name,
she's getting
going
smarter.
On.
She just got smarter with the latest iOS. Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe I'll have to actually give it a try. But, you know, I think we expected some of that out of those devices, not so much, maybe in the future, but certainly now that we know the capabilities of LLMs and the things that they can do and the summarization and kind of the trend analysis that they can do on the fly with a whole bunch of data, you can kind of dump it in and then just say, hey, tell me with my water, like, you know, or like you said, give it permission to alert you and say, hey, if my water usage goes over 10%, alert me, tell me, hey, you know, send me an email or something says, hey, you ought to check your sprinklers. I think we've got one that's out of control.
I think the problem is it has been a race to see who can have all the data required to make those kind of recommendations.
Yeah.
Because to do that, it has to know everything about you. So using the home example, you know, it's the whole reason A-Lady and Amazon wanted all these devices in the house. Because then they would connect to all the smart things in the house and they would know all that data. So it'd be the smartest device you had. It's smarter than Siri because Siri can't see all those items. But when you think about it, like people with Home Assistant does know everything about my home.
And so you
bring that down to the local level, and I'm number one a lot more comfortable trusting something that's in my basement, two, it's now connected to things that actually has the proper amount of data it needs.
One of them, just another and we'll move on here in just a second, but one of the other things I realized, I put a smart plug on the shed for power. You know, and so I could say, hey, a lady, turn on the shed power. And so on hot days, that would turn on, I could turn it on an hour ahead of time. And so it'd be cooling down the shed before I go out there. What I didn't realize is shed and chair sound very similar to our friend at Amazon. And so you know how that goes.
Yeah.
So Sammy is yelling at the assistant to turn on the chair light, and it's thinking, oh, you meant shed power. Like, now to us, that makes sense, but you know how that thing goes with how close these things are. So shed comes on, air conditioner starts running. She doesn't know it's on, right? There's no indication of it. So I think I'm going to have to rename it. Like, that's one of those things where you're like, oh, okay. It's too close to some other things we have in here. And if I truly want to leave it plugged in all the time where I can turn it on, you know, an hour before I go out there when it's really hot. Now we're at the end of the season, so it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to be using air conditioning in there too much longer. But that was one of those things I realized, like, you got to be a little careful. I had set that up. That's outside the house. That's an automation that's now outside of the house. She could have turned that on Monday and I wouldn't have seen it till the next Sunday.
Yep.
Like or, you know, it could be a whole week before I go out there of that air conditioner running 24/7. Now in my Home Assistant monitor here, I might look at it and kind of go, oh boy, the shed power is on. Like, why is that? Right. I might see that, but that's one of those kinds of things where I'm probably going to need to rename it.
But if you're like me, then I'm like, I don't even know where I need to rename that. Is it in the TP-Link app where that I have the smart plug? Is it in Home Assistant? Is it in A-Lady? Is it all three? Is it two of the three? If I change it here, will it propagate to the other two? I hate changing names. And where I've run into it most is I'm finally getting to the age where on some of these light bulbs, the very first Zigbee light bulbs that I ever got are starting to go out. And even when you replace those, oh, shoot. That light's in 20 automations and adding in this light, Home Assistant does need a replace light button. Hey, this light is no longer here's my new one. Replace it. Cause it's a pain. Yeah. It's an absolute pain.
And you get a bunch of lights and you're like, what did I call this thing?
Yeah.
Like I had a chair light that moved downstairs, but to the couch, and it's in the basement. It had been upstairs. Now it's downstairs by the couch. And so you say, hey, turn on all the upstairs lights, and that one turns on. Like, no, wait. And now you're like, okay, I put that in a group. Which group did I put that in? And then sometimes these things migrate. So you could change it in the Alexa app. Sorry, you could change it in the A-Lady app. And that's not necessarily the source of truth. And so you're like, we had Christmas lights that we put on the front of the house. I bought a mesh of Christmas lights and I plugged those, and they have their own automation. And then I've got them plugged into an automated plug. So now I have two different automations and two different schedules that controls those things. They can turn on and off by the plug, or I can turn them on and off in the automation schedule for the Philips, their Philips lights. So they can be turned on and off there too. Mike, it took me 6 days to figure out one time. Okay, it's got to be here tonight, right? And I turn them off, and they'd go. So it was like after Easter. I wanted them for Christmas, Valentine's Day, and Easter, right? And then I was going to shut them off until 4th of July. So Easter's over. It's about a week after. I'm like, okay, I got it. And they're not burning that much energy, but I got to turn these things off. So I turn them off one night, poof, pop open. They're on the next night, right? At sunset. Woof.
And you're like, so where's that automation? Which automation?
It took me 6 times to figure out where the automation lived. Then that one automation was cascading its way down. So even though I would change it in one app, it would, the cascading effect of it would override it, and it would just turn on the next day. And you're like, oh. And still, if you ask me right now, how do I, cause it's off, how do I turn it back on? I told myself when I shut it off, okay, I'm not going to forget where this is at. Like I almost need AI to figure out all that stuff for me. Hey, ChatGPT, where did I leave? Where do I turn off my Christmas lights that are on the front deck of the house? Right. Yeah. It's a horrible problem.
Oh, that was like last year. We got the Christmas tree all set up. And we go to sit on the couch the very first night. And Hannah's like, oh, turn on the Christmas tree. I was like, hey, lady, turn on the podcast lights. And the tree goes on. She's like, I'm like, I had to borrow a plug from downstairs. And so now if you want that on, you got to say podcast light. And she's like, that's not going to fly. You got to change that. But, you know, you just borrow a smart plug from wherever. I couldn't find the one we had for the Christmas tree. And so you just had to say Christmas.
I've told you this. I've stolen, you know, I've had the Christmas tree, and it was called Christmas tree lights. I did the opposite of you. And I'd put it away, and then I'd be like, oh, I need a plug. Oh, I just grab the Christmas tree one and use it. Then you get super dependent on it, and it's powering the monitors or whatever. And so I've even changed the name. And then November 29th comes around. You're setting up the Christmas tree, and the kids are like, where's the plug? And you're like, oh, I got to order a new one. I got to order a new one. I've even ordered two, and I've used both. Yeah. Like, they've both gotten consumed.
Oh yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And every year you're like, I'm not going to take that plug. I'm going to leave it there. That one's staying. And you always end up using it for something.
I think right now there is a plug in the Christmas tree stuff that I haven't stolen yet. Like I'm kind of committed to it, but I've stolen the last three.
There's still time. You still got a month. Still got a month to steal it.
Oh, I just don't know if I need it at this point. I don't know if I need another one of the all the monitors are on four. You know, I got four of those plugs, and you'd think I had to just put them all next to each other on the same power strip. So you could literally, if you needed to manually turn them on or off, which we kind of needed to do during the power outage, right? During the power outage, the computers worked, but none of the assistants did because I don't have those plugged into the backup. Like, you know, you kind of think, you know, you don't really need those things during a power outage, right? So, but then I had to reach around and then I'm like, which one of those does which light now? You know, kind of thing. Eventually you figure it out, but you're like clicking all these different lights. So that was another one. You're like, oh, you know what I had to do? I had to organize this so all the plugs are on the same. Like, I had to get the power strip to a spot where I can reach it easily.
Yep.
I don't have to fish through a bunch of cables to get in there. And then they're all in and then written on the outside is exactly what the name of them is, so that you can just be like,
that would make too much sense. We don't. We're just going to struggle through like we do every year, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. At least this year I haven't stolen the Christmas tree plug.
I have, so I don't know what I'm going to do. I should just order it now while I'm thinking about it, because I've already stolen it again. And I don't know where it is. I have no idea where it is.
Did you rename it at least?
No, it's still Christmas tree. And I see it in Home Assistant and I see it on. I just don't know which one it is around the house. I just have not. I think it's actually in my attic. I think I put it on to reset the. I have a switch in my attic, just a 5-port switch for security cameras.
Yeah.
I think that's where it might be.
Let's talk about security cameras. We got just a few minutes left here, but lots of times when you're on, you've been trying different ways of monitoring, keeping track, having the video. You're trying something I never heard of before. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So you guys know I've always loved one of two products, Blue Iris or SightHound. Now, when I was back in my Mac days and I had an extra Mac kicking around, I was big on SightHound. And then I had switched over to Blue Iris, and Blue Iris is great. Blue Iris is very battle proven, I would almost call it, like just very in depth, a lot of things you can turn on and off and settings and tweaks and changes. And so for me, I had run Blue Iris on its own box. I had run Blue Iris most recently in a VM. And that works and it's fine. And if you're a Blue Iris person, you know, you can stick with it. It's fantastic. But what I was looking for was Blue Iris only runs on Windows. That is the only way you can run it. And I really just wanted a Docker that would run my security cameras. And primarily because the GPU that I have in my server, my Blue Iris box didn't have a graphics card. And that really did. I noticed like when it came to like rendering out the video and exporting it and even transcoding some of the streams, it wasn't great. It was choppy. So I needed a GPU on whatever I was running. And so I'm like, okay, Docker would be great because I already have a GPU in Docker for Plex and all those items. So what I found was, and this really came through Home Assistant, because that's where I think this project gained popularity, but the Docker is called a Frigate. So Frigate. So it's Frigate. And I found it at the perfect time because Frigate was going through a big UI overhaul, and especially with their web UI and how it looks and everything and how it integrates into Home Assistant. But this is when I had found this project actually about 2 years ago, but what turned me off about it, and unfortunately it still is the way it is today, the configuration is through a YAML file. So when you initially create and run it for the first time, you do have to create. Now they have a template that you can start to follow, but you can't just like, you know, Blue Iris and SightHound, it was just like click a box, it'll go find the web address and it'll do all that for you. This one, you do have to create a YAML file. But really, if you just sit down and follow their documentation, just tell yourself, yeah, it might be a painful 45 minutes to an hour, just making sure you get it all working. But after you have it done, I am in love with this Docker container. It uses very minimal resources. Number one, it's a Docker container, which just wins. It is fast. It is responsive. The web UI, I think, is fantastic. Now, what I will say is like where Blue Iris could be used almost in like in for work, right? You could use it for security for your building. Frigate is really intended for homes. This is not probably something that you would deploy in a commercial setting, but for homes, it is absolutely perfect. It still, it does the people detection, the car detection, the alerts that it puts up top. If you do have a GPU to put at it, it is extremely fast. The way it does recordings and everything is very granular. So yeah, the only downside to it is doing the configuration. You do not have to pay for Plus. I have always used the free version. I haven't really even looked into Plus. I know some people are into it. I think there's some more.
It's only 50 training a year. Things.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not terribly expensive, right? This isn't $50 a month. It's $50 a year for their price point.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I actually haven't even looked into it, but it's phenomenal. So if you're looking for something different, if you're looking for, to run something in Docker, I would highly recommend Frigate. The integration into Home Assistant, if you're a Home Assistant person, is beautiful. It works great. If you're trying to get alerts or triggers into Home Assistant, it works really, really well there.
My Ring cameras wouldn't work with something like this because that's fairly tied into the Ring system, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that drove me crazy about Ring is they didn't have their live view was also a recording view. So if you started the live view, it was automatically recording and it was just, it's a lot of bandwidth. They now have a live start live views and they'll just run. And so if you want to grab a camera or if you want to set up a couple of those cameras to be live, you can just start the live view and start the cameras. And then it gives you a little, it still doesn't stream forever. I think there's a 30-minute cap or something on those. You're not streaming that to their servers, which it's a right. Well, and actually now that I say that, I don't think they're recording them. I think,
but it is going through them back to you.
It'd have to. Yeah. There's nothing local about Ring, but, this is one of those areas, Mike, where I think I kind of go back and forth on where like, should I just get some regular cameras? Cause I like them on all the time.
Yeah.
Yet I'm at work 5 days a week now. During the pandemic, that was helpful. Today, do I really need to be looking at my cameras in the dark? You know? So I've kind of just fallen back on, I'm just going to leave them. Just going to leave them the way they are. And Ring's fine. $120 a year now, I think, is what I'm up to for the four cameras. So I'm paying a little bit for them, but.
Yeah, I think for the reason people should go local, number one is if you have more than two cameras, that's where I would start looking at something like this. Especially because you think of just the bandwidth of getting those Ring cameras out to the internet and back. The reliability, if you have more than two cameras, hardwiring all those, doing PoE is just, it's just rock solid. There's never a hiccup. There's never a stutter. I know that absolutely everything is being recorded. We've caught some pretty funny moments on our cameras. We always like having them up. So yeah, it's a great system. If you're looking for Docker or, Joe said that he found Blue Iris a little too complicated. I agree. And maybe Joe, especially for people of this community, you guys actually might like a YAML configuration file better than clicking through a bunch of UI windows. Especially because really once you get the configuration that you like for your first camera, it's copy and paste and change the URL for whatever camera you're going to. So it's nice. And then I do kind of like being able to deploy that. And especially if I move systems, I just have to move my configuration file over and we're good to go.
Yeah. The YAML file. It's not as bad as it sounds. I mean, no. I've even edited the YAML files to make them, and they're just a text file format that you go in there and put some things in. And once, like you said, once you figure out the format, kind of makes sense. And typically, yeah. I think the last time I did YAML was when we did what was not Blue Iris, but what else did I try out with you? That was a video.
Probably Home Assistant. Was it not?
No. Yeah, it doesn't matter. There was a YAML file part of that, and you'd go in and they give you clues like, hey, format it this way.
Yeah.
Type deal. And it works just well. Mike, as we wrap this up, anything you're looking ahead on real quick? Anything that you've got in your sights for the future here?
Well, I did just, there was a business that was going from local to cloud. They're in the Woodman Tower downtown. Just today I went and picked up another server. I didn't need it. It's super old, but honestly, I was looking to buy a server case, that, you know, the rack mountable ones. Those are like $200 nowadays.
Yeah, I know.
So this guy was selling the case I wanted with some hardware in there for $120. I'm like, done. Like, that sounds great. So, finding a use for that, which will be no problem at all for me. But I have another server in the server rack just now ready to get powered up. So I'll probably put Proxmox on that. So maybe next time I'm on, I can talk to you about the kind of the switch that I've been making. I still have my main machine as Unraid, but for all my other machines, I've been using Proxmox with clustering, and I've really been enjoying it. It's a really good, really good way to set it up.
Yeah. Nice. Good. Good. Well, thanks for coming out tonight. Always good to have you. We'll schedule you for another one here shortly. And then we need to do a personal and in person, and you can maybe help me set up the node.
Bring you a node.
Let me know. Let me know. We'll test it out here at the Rusty Nail at the averageguy.tv studios. So we'll give that a try. Can you hang tight while I wrap this up?
Yep.
A couple reminders on the way out. We are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, out here at theaverageguy.tv/live. If you're not a regular listener, come out and join us some Thursday night. We have a good time here. I don't have anything scheduled for next week. Doesn't mean I'm not going to do anything. I just don't have anything scheduled at the moment. Maybe I'll get Gavin in here to talk a little bit about some of the things that Mike talked about on Home Assistant. Next, the week after that, the 24th, Bob and Ryan are scheduled to come back from Think Computers. So come out and join us live. And then don't forget that the AverageGuy.tv studios is powered by Maple Grove Partners. Get secure, reliable, high-speed hosting from people that you know and you trust. And you know that's Christian. Plans start still as little as $10 a month. MapleGrovePartners, all one word, .com. And Christian, Mike, you got to love this. Christian pinged me yesterday. He goes, I upgraded with a bunch of new equipment. Can you test it out? You're like, that's awesome. Right.
How much he loves that stuff too. Like, oh, that's great.
Yeah. What I just love is he's always thinking about it. You know?
Yeah.
He's really worried about security and speed.
Yep.
Those are two things that Christian loves. So check it out, maplegrovepartners.com if you need a hosting plan. And Christian, thanks for your friendship to the podcast over the last, it's crazy, 14 years. We're coming up on the 14th anniversary of Home Gadget Geeks. That'll be December 3rd. We'll get We'll get Christian back as well for that one. Again, we are live every Thursday, 8 p.m. Central, 9 Eastern, at theaverageguy.com/live. I'll be back next week. I'm in a hurry because we got hard stops. With that, we'll say goodbye, everybody.